Join the chorus. It's time for another North Melbourne Footy Club update with Dean Vasek and special guests on Hashtag Kangaroos.
Hi, this is Ben McKay from the North Melbourne Footy Club, and you're listening to another episode of the Hashtag Kangaroos podcast. Here is your host, Dean.
Thank you, Ben McKay. Welcome to another episode. If this is your first time listening to the show, then welcome. My name is Dean Vasek. You can find me on Twitter at #Kangas or on Instagram at #KangaroosPodcast. I'm also on TikTok as well on #Kangaroos1. Today, I'm back on Thursday to preview our game coming up against the Pies on Sunday. So who better to get on the show than Siobhan Rowe? We talked about last week's game, and is that the game that can turn the club turn the tide for the club around for the rest of the season and this Sunday as well? Are we a chance this week? There's plenty to discuss, so let's bring on Siobhan right now.
All right, so tonight I welcome back Siobhan Rowe. We have a lot to go through tonight, so let's get straight to it. May as well go back to last week and the game against the Swans, Siobhan. After a really slow start, we responded really well, and we're very unlucky not to get the win. What were the things that impressed you the most from the game?
Hey, Dean, great to be with you again tonight. Yeah, you mentioned the slow start. It didn't look great in the first 10 minutes, that's for sure. If Sydney had capitalised on their opportunities, I feel like we might have been talking about a different ending to the game. But what a turnaround. What a turnaround in the way that we attack the contest. I think Jai Simkin set the tone by kicking what was a captain's goal, and then Paul Curtis put his hand up for the Goal of the Year nomination. And overall, I think in the first quarter, especially the second part of that first quarter, the pressure is what was so impressive about the game and the way that it unfolded. I think we were relentless, and that's the type of pressure that wins the games of footy, and we were so unlucky to actually not win that game. So that was the part that probably stood out the most, and I think the energy that George Wardlaw brought in that midfield was certainly another aspect that probably turned things around. Isn't he going to be a star? The way that he attacked the man and the ball, so hungry for the contest, which is exactly what we want to see. So I think in the first quarter, that those were probably the turning points for us. And overall in the game, I think you have to be really pleased with the way that our young midfield brigade, and by midfield, I'm also including the wingmen in this. So Bailey Scott, and the way that he just was running all day and collected 33 touches and a goal and was clean and fast, and that was the best game I've seen him play on a wing for us. I mentioned Simkin before, and the way that his response was after last week. He was certainly challenged by David King on the first crack, and he came out and acknowledged that maybe his effort and his second efforts and performance probably weren't up to standard, but he was probably our best mid on the day. He was absolutely outstanding. So really happy to see him come back into form. There were so many positives. I could keep going on for this whole podcast, but the midfield group were really, really impressive. Even Will Phillips, whose numbers might have not jumped off the page, but he had his head over the pill all day. And the fact he had the bandages on his forehead said everything about the way he attacked the contest. So that was probably the most impressive part. We know that we've built in this rebuild from the midfield out. And it was nice to see us get some fruit for reward in that area against Warner and Parker. I still think at times the way Sydney moved the ball and spread certainly was too easy, and they got some really easy goals from that. But overall, you have to be pleased by that area of the ground. There are plenty of other players that I will touch on. And the forward line was another area I thought was a lot better. They seemed to gel nicely. The delivery was a lot better, and I'm sure that has a big part to it. And Sydney did have an undermanned back line, but it just seemed like having Harry Sheasel in there, we just looked so much better. He finished with the two goals, and he just continues to find the ball for fun with 25 touches again. So I think him in the forward line is something that we should persist with for the rest of the season, Dean, because he is an absolute star of the competition 10 games in. It's phenomenal. So Harry Sheasel forward kind of lifted the performance of everyone else around him. So, yeah, there were a lot of positives to take away from the game. There's still plenty to work on. Certainly, like I mentioned, some of the Sydney goals probably looked a bit too easy on the day. But not super impressed and couldn't be happier in a game that we lost. So it's a bit strange to be saying it, but it was overall one that I probably will re-watch again and again. And I think that was probably our best performance of the season, to be fair, just the way that everyone played. There wasn't a player that I would say had a really terrible game. So, yeah, our best performance of the year under trying circumstances as well. I think that's the last point I wanted to touch on is I think in the first 10 minutes of the game, it looked as though we were very lethargic and weren't up to the contest, which was disappointing because of the events of the week. But I think throughout the rest of the game, we showed great spirit and great grit, which was really, really impressive because it was obviously a tough week and it could have gone either way. The players could have dropped their heads and not shown what they did. But the fact that they rallied together and put in that sort of performance after, you know, Clarko stepped down and we had a new senior coach in the box, was really impressive and says a lot about the maturity and the resilience of the group we have in front of us.
Yeah, definitely. I'm a little bit disappointed you didn't mention CCJ at all, your boy.
There'll be a whole segment on that, Dean. I think that's why I didn't mention his name.
Okay. Oh, well, fair enough. I've ruined that then. So, yeah, we'll continue to move forward. All very good points. Probably was our best performance. And I was thinking after the first 10 minutes of the game, I was thinking, read like a script that we've seen before. We just looked very flat, very lethargic, minus 10 in contested possessions early, minus 11 in uncontested possessions. But like you said, Jai Simpkin getting that goal on the board and Paul Curtis just really lifting us. George Wardlaw with this relentless tack on the ball and going from contest to contest was just something I haven't seen in an individual for a very long time. Now, we've had a good week after the Clarkson news with not only good for performance, but with George Wardlaw signing on till 2026. Who do you think would be the more loved player out of him and Harry Shees or Siobhan?
A tough question. That's a question I don't know whether I'm going to be able to answer because we've seen Sheasel for a number of weeks now, and I know going to the games you see so many kids with their Harry Sheasel badges on, and it's so uplifting because they're two players that we can easily build a team around, and I don't think we've had a player like that in such a long time at the club. So Wardlaw's only played the one game, so we'll give him a little bit more time because I think Georgie's probably the more how do I put this in a nice way, he's probably more the bulldozer where Sheasel's the flashy player. So it really does depend on what type of player you're looking for there, but they're both going to be an integral part of the future of the club. And we've seen Harry's versatility, especially playing in the back line when he hadn't played in that position before. And he basically won us that game against Fremantle with his smarts to toe poke that ball out. And he's done so many impressive things since then. And the fact that he has played one game now in the forward half for us and could have won the game in the last quarter, unfortunately missed that set shot, but contributed with two goals too. And just looks the complete player, doesn't he? He spent time in the midfield and he's clean and smart. And there's not much more you can say about what he brings to the team because, to be fair, at this point, I feel like he's one of our most important players, which is just unbelievable. And Wardlaw came in and provided way more than probably what I was expecting. I think what sums up his performance was when he was collected by Will Haywood in the middle of the ground and bounced straight back up and thought, okay, here we go. Here's another contest. Some players might have gotten a bit meek and mild after that and thought, look, I don't want to injure myself, which would have been fair enough. But he just wants the body contact and he wants the ball and he'll do it at all costs. And what was also impressive was his decision-making and his skill, summed up by that play in the the forward pocket to that kick to Goldstein. I mean, that's, again, we haven't seen I certainly haven't seen a player come in like that and play pure midfield minutes and look so good from the end of the game to from the start of the game to the end of the game. He gave 110%, and that's all we can ask for. I think they're two players that have a great attitude, great skill, and seem like they're great people to have at the club. So for George to sign that contract extension, I think gives us all a reason to smile. And I'm not saying they're two players that are going to completely turn the club around, but I've got no doubt they'll play a part in turning the club's fortunes around just by being there and contributing every week. I think both of them at the moment, especially Harry Sheasel, have probably done more than contribute. They've been incredible players for us so far. So I'd like to know who you probably see as the better of the two, or do you have them on even pegging for now?
Oh, look, if I had to pick someone to build a statue for, it'd probably just be Harry Sheasel. But, geez, George Wardlaw, oh, friggin' hell. He's going to be a very much loved player when you watch him play, just the way he brings it. He reminds me very much of a Clayton Oliver type. Yeah. And like you said, these boys could shape the culture of your club. That's how much influence these two could have. And, yeah, we won clearances last week. But, you know, a lot of our clearances in the past when we've won them, it's just been hack kicks forward. These guys are very good at creating space for others. You know, you see Will Phillips, he did the dirty work and then get it to Harry Sheasel. Harry Sheasel will put in space for Wardlaw and he might give it to Bailey Scott or something like that. And we're able to get a lot cleaner inside 50 entries as well rather than they're just long bombs. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty close. But if I had to build a statue right now, it'd probably be Harry Sheasel. If I had to pick one of them to, you know, come home with my daughter, I'd probably pick Harry Sheasel. But, George Wardlaw wouldn't be too far away. Very very high characters and both very good-looking individuals as well. It's something very...
have a real synergy amongst each other. I think we saw that. They're great mates, and I think they both know where they are on the field, which is also something that I don't think I've seen before in a North Melbourne side. I think George Wardlaw reminds me, you can tell me I'm wrong here, that of like a mini Cunners, I think he's, but probably a bit more pace on the outside than what Cunnington brings. But he's, you're right, Dean. They're two players we can build the club around.
Yeah, I mean... looking at now, you might know a lot more about last year's draft prospects, but halfway through last year, now we all know how good of a year Will Ashcroft is having, but they were pretty close, weren't they? They were on par with each other. It was like 1A, 1B, and then it obviously had hamstring issues, and we're still working through that this year. But he doesn't look like he has too many flaws, except maybe a set shot from goal, really.
Yeah, true. I think in the draft, because of his repeat hamstring injuries, I think that probably turned a few clubs off. And the fact that he couldn't play out the NAB League season and couldn't play in the championships as well probably had an impact on the fact that he may have slid down the draft order. Certainly looks a really good prospect and still went at pick four. So we're certainly not saying that he fell off a cliff, but I think that the injuries may have turned some clubs off from picking him a bit higher in the draft, but deserved his place in the top five. You can certainly see that that elite talent that he possesses.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good cop from last year's draft, just quietly. And looking forward to watching some of these players dominate for the next 15 years, especially at top end. The top 10 is very good. I want to talk to you about positional changes. Tom Powell in the back line, how did you see that?
Yeah, look, he kicked that awesome goal in the last quarter that, may I just touch on the atmosphere at the ground when Powell banged that one through? I think a lot of us thought we'd won the grand final. It was such a great atmosphere at the ground. People were jumping around, really excited. Powell did kick that great goal in the last quarter, but I'm not quite sure that's his position, Dean. I still think he belongs in the midfield. He finished with 12 touches and, to be fair, wasn't outstanding. I think his skills can still best be utilised as a midfielder. I think the club have probably pinpointed that we are very slow out of the back line, and without Aaron Hall there, who, again, makes questionable decisions at times, we are very stagnant. So probably the injection of pace was to bring Powell in through there. But I still think he's a midfielder long term. It was probably an experiment, and an experiment that may continue next week. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, look, he's kind of had to find a new position because right now, and last week with our LDU, we had Wardlaw, Sheasel, Simpkin, Greenwood, Phillips, and you got LDU to come back in. So I think he's kind of – they're kind of trolling him in the back line, maybe for a month or two to see how he goes there. Yeah, because weight of numbers suggests that, we probably don't need him in the midfield right now, and we want to try something different there.
Yeah, there's no doubt it's probably a trial and error situation. The only thing that I would be a little bit sad for is I think he was drafted as a midfielder, and he has great skills, but – even as a half forward, I think he might be better suited there than in the back half. To be fair, I didn't really notice him on the day playing from the back line. It wasn't until fairly late in the game that I thought, oh, Tom Powell's playing the back line. So if you're not having a big impact, maybe it's only an experiment we'll see for a little bit during the year. But I know Taron Thomas has been trialed off half back. So whether or not we see Taron at AFL level this year, he might replace Powell in that spot, but we know how many midfielders we do have in the side. So it's a good point, Dean, that maybe Powell's been squeezed out and they still think he's good enough to play at AFL level, but there's no room for him in the guts alongside, you know, Phillips and Simpkin and Wardlaw now and Jai. So it might be at the point where he is unable to play pure midfield minutes.
Yeah, I mean, you can have a try these things. If it doesn't work, you just go back to what what we know, and that's probably a midfield time for him. And look, you're probably going to get injuries players drop off in form. So I'm sure he'll get another opportunity through the midfield at some point. Eddie Ford spent a fair bit of time on the wing as well as half forward. He was excellent also with 21 possessions, including 15 in the second half. Are you surprised it took this long for him to get a game this year?
I am. I think Eddie Ford is probably, and again, I'm not trying to put anyone down, but if you were choosing a player out of Curtis Taylor or Eddie Ford, both of them play a very similar role. I would probably say Eddie Ford has the chocolates. He was really good, wasn't he? He brings a lot of spunk. I think he's got really good disposal. Kicked one goal for the game, and it was a fair snag in itself. So he looked really good. I think he's a confidence player. That's what I get from Eddie Ford, is that once he kicks one, once he hits a nice kick, he'll continue to do that for the game. Again, he's probably that player that isn't exclusively that pressure small forward, but more that medium-sized forward that can take a nice mark and set up some of the play because he does have good disposal. So he's someone I definitely think we should be persisting with for the rest of the season. And unless he has some real stinkers, just continue to play him in that role and see what he can produce.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he has a lot of class, like you said. Yeah, he's a very classy ball user. He's not overly quick or anything like that, but generally uses the ball pretty well. So there's a couple of times I did notice that he went for the chest mark, and he did take a couple of chest marks. I like to see him use his hands and put his hands in front of his body so he doesn't give a defender a chance to spoil the ball. So that's just me nitpicking. But other than that, no, especially that second half, he was fantastic. And, was a big reason why we got back into the game and hit the lead by 15 points. Now, before we get into this week's game, we have the mid-season draft coming up. How would you like to see this go? Would you like to see Sam Lowson or maybe a younger developing player like Ryan Marich from Box Hill Hawks get picked up? There is a talk about Clay Tucker as well, a 204-centimetre ruck forward from the Eastern Rangers. Hamish Free has a shoulder injury that could put him out long-term and possibly a year. Sherry and Combin are still out. So it leaves Goldie and CCJ as their only two big guys really on the list at the moment. I don't think it's going to be life-changing, this sort of pick. What are your thoughts on which way we should go? I mean, Sam Lowson would be a good story, I guess.
It's tough. It's tough because the mid-season draft for us hasn't been very successful in the past, let's be honest. And it is it is potluck. Collingwood got super lucky with John Noble. He's probably been the biggest success story. And Marlon Pickett at the Tigers. There have been some players that have been found, but it's more trying to find that diamond in the rough. That, like you mentioned, there were reports today that we're looking at 204-centimetre Eastern Rangers ruckman forward Clay Taylor. Whether or not we go down that path, I'm not sure. Just because of the fact that we picked up Jacob Edwards, and to be fair, it doesn't look like Jacob Edwards is coming on in any sort of way at the moment. It seems our list is pretty stacked with ruckman. I do acknowledge that Free is injured, but there are other players that are available through the draft. We've spoken at length about Sam Lawson, and if we went that way, I certainly wouldn't be upset about that. He is on probably the wrong side of 25, but get a few years out of him and certainly would provide another option for us up forward. There's a midfielder at the moment that's been running around for Richmond's VFL called Luke Teal. He was really unlucky to not get drafted in last year's draft, and we know the quality of players that came from that draft. So, playing for Vic Country in the Young Guns game a couple weeks ago, he had 32 touches. Again, he's another midfielder. So whether or not we wanted to go down the path of a key position or a ruckman is entirely up to what the club kind of feels. There are some other prospects. A forward named Jack Buller from the Waffle. He's 199 centimetres and 99 kilos. He's been absolutely dominant in the Waffle all year. He's only 22 years old, so certainly is one that we'd be looking at. But West Coast might be taking him with their first pick, and we don't know whether or not he even wants to move away from Perth. So if I was looking at a project player, if we are seriously looking at Clay Tucker from the Eastern Rangers, I would probably think that North would want to be looking at Jack Buller, but West Coast do have that pick one. So it'll be an interesting night to see where we go with it, because there are names that many of us don't know about potentially that might be called out on the night. But it's a punt, and it's something that maybe we should look at a long-term prospect player rather than a short-term fix in Sam Lawson. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm guessing, Dean, that you'd probably want to go down the path of Lawson.
I like him. Like, he's very classy, but I think Mark mentioned the other day, we've got a number of those players that we've missed at the moment. You know, you got Jaden Stevenson, Paul Curtis. You get Braden George back next year as well. That's probably, you know, a similar sort of player. So it's not, and Zerha, it's not like we're short on those types of options. Eddie Ford, just name another. So, yeah, I mean, whether you think he's going to get that opportunity and be a very good AFL player, you've got to be confident that he's going to play three or four good years of AFL football if he's already 28 years old. So, yeah, maybe, look, I'm starting to sour a bit on him, but it would be a good story if we did pick him up. But I'm not going to place too much emphasis on the mid-season draft. I looked at last year's picks last year, and there wasn't much coming out. And like you said, it's like trying to find a diamond in the rough. It's going to be very hard at this time of year to find that player. Jacob Edwards was the number one pick. And, yeah, he's getting about three touches a game or something like that in the reserves and really struggling right now. Not developing as well as we would like. Another thing that's come up is the end of the season, obviously draft. Now, we've got a clear number one in Harley Reid. Now, he mentioned on the Gettable podcast, now, he didn't say in so many words, but it sounds like he's a country boy and he wants to stay in Melbourne. He doesn't want to – he basically said, I'm very much a family man and so forth. He didn't say – look, usually you say, look, I'm just happy to play AFL. I'll go anywhere. But he didn't say those words. So would you package up – our first, like, let's say we finish third last, just for to make conversation. Let's say we finish third last, and would you give up that and Port Adelaide's first rounder to go to number one, like we similar to what we did, I guess, giving up number one last year to GWS, although we gave up pick 40, got pick 40, I guess. So yeah, would you give up Port Adelaide's first and our third pick? Let's say.
Yeah, it's a. I don't envy any of our list managers at the moment, because by the looks of it, Harley Reid is the clear number one pick. But you're right, from his commentary to Cal Toomey and Riley Beveridge, it didn't seem as though he was already packing his bags to go to West Coast. And traditionally, the Perth sides do prefer to stick to their homegrown talent, just due to the nature of the go home factor. But in saying that, I do think West Coast would probably be silly if they did land Luss to not take the risk with Harley Reid. If he was still available, or West Coast were willing to trade the number one pick for us or for anyone else to access Harley, I'm not sure, because mercurial small forward Nick Watson, who we've spoken a little bit about, is a prospect that will be going fairly high in the draft, well before Port Adelaide's pick, it looks like, at this point. He's one that I've been keeping my eye on, who would be perfect. He's a traditional small forward who has pace, has smarts, has goal sense, and that's still an area of need for us. I don't know whether or not we purely pick Harley Reid because of how much of a strong talent he is, but he's another midfielder. So if we're talking like we did just before about Tom Powell not being able to play midfield minutes because of how many players we have rotating through there, do we take that risk and pick another midfielder, even if he is a generational type player? Or do we go for a needs-based player like a Nick Watson, or there are plenty of tall prospects in this year's draft? Do we purely go for the fact that we need more key position depth? It's a question that I'm sure Brady Rawlings is thinking about as we speak, because like I mentioned, the plethora of talls is real and at the top end of the draft, but you've also got a player in Harley Reid that in 5 years' time could be laughing at us if we miss the opportunity to take him. So there's no doubt there's a lot to think about and a lot more to play out in the year. But if the option was there to package up our first pick, which could be pick 2 or 3, and Ports, which might be, you know, pick 15 at this point, it's a strong possibility that we take Harley. Or if West Coast are willing to take that risk, they take that risk, because I don't see us landing last this year, Dean. I think West Coast are the clear bottom side.
Yeah, I can't see them getting out of bottom. They're a game of percentage behind us. So, and even if they did beat us in the later part of the season, they'll still be behind on percentage, you'd have to think. And I think there's going to be more smashings to come, because if they lost to the bottom team by, 19 goals, I think this is going to be a trend that continues. And like you said, I mean, you made a very good point. We've got a plethora of midfield options. We've just thrown in Harry Shears or George Wardlaw. How many can you have at the end of the day? One of these players is going to have to get maybe squeezed out and not get as many midfield minutes time. So, yeah, maybe it's if we've got pick 3, you go needs based, and that might be a Nick Watson, who's a Tom Papley type of player that we're crying out for. So yeah, no, it's going to be very interesting to see how that develops. Maybe I think Melbourne's got a few first rounders as well, so apparently there's a lot of talk about them that they might try and move up to the number one pick. So yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll worry about that later in the year. Who knows? We might win 8 in a row, Siobhan, and get ourselves into the finals position.
We can only dream, Dean. We can only dream.
I'll take 1 in a row at this stage. So yes, we'll talk about team changes that have come through in the last hours. Now, into the team come Aiden Court, Ben Cunnington, Cameron Zerha, Charlie Lazaro. Zerha and Daniel Howe coming to the 22 at this stage, while the other three are all on the extended bench with Ford, Hall, Phillips and Drury. Out of the team goes Liam Shields with the concussion protocols. So it's definitely going to be at least one more change. Are you happy with those changes or potential ones?
Yeah, look, I think Zerha is an automatic inclusion, Dean. You probably agree with that. If he's fit and ready to go, he plays every week. I did say to my dad on Saturday, I think Cam Zerha may have been the difference in the game on Saturday, but you can only dream and you can only ponder about things. The result is what it is. So I think Zerha's an automatic inclusion. And to be fair, Lazaro had a great game in the VFL, but I don't know whether or not he comes into the side. I do still believe Charlie Lazaro is a very good VFL player, but struggles when it comes to AFL. Whether he needs an extended run, I'm not sure. But I think the one change will be Zoha for Shields. Cunners, again, I cannot believe that we're talking about Ben Cunnington not in this side. But we were talking about before, there's just so many players in that midfield at the moment that I think Wardlaw, Simkin, Sheasel even... LDU is not even in that side at the moment, but I do still think that it's hard for Cunners to come back in the side. And I also think the team actually functioned better without Aiden Corr. Having Mackay and Logue in that back half and Siebel playing as that third tall, and then you have McDonald who can also play tall and small. I do think that this week Corr doesn't deserve his spot back in the side. I know he was suspended, he wasn't injured or dropped, but it just looks like a more functional defence. Collingwood as well, you look at their forward line, they've got the one sort of key tall in Mason Cox and the rest are medium to small. So I don't see a spot for Corr back in the side. So I think the one change for this week.
I think it will definitely be two because Daniel Howe's been named on the wing. So generally when that happens, it sounds like to your surprise by what I just said then. So, yeah, on the bench, we've got Corr, Ford, Hall, Phillips, Drury, Lazaro and Cunnington. Like you said, I can't see Corr getting into the team. Cunnington, not with Hugh Greenwood in the form that he is. And Lazaro, probably not as well. We've got a number of midfielders. So, I'd say the bench will be Ford, Hall, Phillips, Drury with possibly maybe Lazaro as a sub. Maybe. We'll wait and see, I suppose. So Collingwood coming up this week. Looking at the statistics, and the Pies don't stand out in too many areas. About middle of the road in a lot of categories, you know, in the 6th to 8th range. But they're just very even across the board with any real weaknesses. And play for each other, don't they, Siobhan? They're very good to watch as a team.
They're the best side in the competition and, in my view, by a fair way. They are so good in every area of the ground, and I think the only way that we can remain competitive with Collingwood for 4 quarters is by doing what we did against the Swans, but even probably turning the amplifier up a bit more is just pressure, 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 because they're so good at... What I think Collingwood are excellent at doing is running on the outside and running in waves. So if you're not providing pressure and you're not up the bum of the next bloke that has the ball, they will run rings around you, especially under the roof at Marvel Stadium. I fear if we're not in our game, that it could become ugly really quickly. So I'm surprised to hear Collingwood aren't standing out in any major stats, because they just seem to be functioning on every area of the ground. They're a quality side and probably the antithesis of where we are at the moment, because I think they just believe in each other and the system so well that I'm hoping one day, you know, our boys will believe in themselves and the system as well as Collingwood do. So it'll be a tough challenge, but I think the only way to remain in the game is probably by ensuring that we're taking the most of our opportunities and making Collingwood fumble, or at least not allowing them clean possession.
Yeah, our pressure rating last week was 189 in total, according to Champion Data, which is quite high, which is quite significantly higher than Sydney was as last week. So it'll have to be close to that if we want to put in a real competitive performance. Are we a chance to cause a boil over? Not really.
Never say never, Dean. Never say never. Collingwood have been up for a long time now. And usually teams that are up, they eventually come down a peg. But sadly, we've got the Pies during Side Bottom's 300th game. So I've got no doubt they'll want to perform for him. And I just think they're going so well at the moment. I don't know who will be able to put a stop to the train. Hopefully it's us. I think we'll remain competitive. I don't think it's going to be a complete disaster, but we'll have to be at our best to compete against the Pies. Just the system they have, it's hard to tear down. They're playing really good footy.
Yeah, definitely. Very, yeah. I mean, they've got some stars in that team, like Darcy Moore, Jordan Ngoi, Scott Pendlebury, just to name a few. But yeah, they all just play a role for the team, and they don't do anything more than they have to. A lot of these role players. But yeah, obviously, I'm missing Nick Dacos as well. He's you know, a star of the competition. You know, he's almost as good as Harry Sheasel, really. But you know, they're a very quality unit, play for each other. And yeah, I mean, it's very early, yeah, you know, we're only halfway through the year, but they'll definitely be premiership favourites right now. Now, I don't think we can win, but what would make you happy at the end of the game? Maybe a 3-4 goal loss with signs of progression and, you know, not taking two steps backwards from last week?
Yeah, I think what would make me happy, I mean, I'm not obviously expecting to win the game. Even if we lost the game by 5 goals, which is a real possibility just with how well Collingwood are playing at the moment, I'd like to just see us remain competitive and certainly bringing the same brand of footy. I think that's what will make me really pleased. We kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but Callum Coleman-Jones's game against Sydney was so good. I'm so pleased to see him taking marks and looking really confident. So in terms of his game against Collingwood, I think he's a player that plays on confidence, and he's certainly a player where he finds it easier. What am I trying to say here? He against the Swans, I think in that last quarter, he seemed to be marking everything that came in his direction, even on the wing, which was so impressive. And he made a contest over the ball and in the forward line and contributed with 2 goals himself. But the Swans did have a really undermanned back line. So this week against a player like Darcy Moore, we can't allow what Carlton did last week with Collingwood by just allowing Moore to intercept everything. So I'd like to see CCJ, if he's not contributing on the scoreboard, at least making sure that Moore isn't intercepting everything, allowing that progression between himself and Nick Larkey once again to kind of put that synergy together and play it as a unit. So I'd like to see that as well, just because of how dominant Moore was in the air last week. I just hope that we keep rolling our eyes and delivering the ball inside 50 in a better fashion, because otherwise we're going to get slaughtered. So just continuing on from what we saw last week, really, and remaining competitive against a team that have destroyed a lot of sides this year.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, no, look, yeah, we can't just bomb it in long blindly to him. We've got to lower our eyes definitely this week and try and get a bit outside run. It is very tough against Collingwood because their pressure can be relentless through the middle of the ground, and you are forced to kick long sometimes. But, yeah, Callum Coleman-Jones is probably going to play an important part in this game if we're going to be competitive. And like you said, last week was the type of player that we went so hard for, didn't we, a couple of years ago? Just his ability to take marks in the contest was a good out when we went long down the line towards the wing a lot of times. Yeah, so a real breakout game for him, and hopefully he can continue that this week. So I'm glad you got a couple minutes to talk about Callum Coleman-Jones there, Siobhan. I know he's your boy, so yeah, no, it's good to hear. What's your final prediction for the game?
Yeah, look, I think Collingwood will probably win this one fairly comfortably, probably by about 5-6 goals, to be fair, Dean. But like I mentioned before, I'd just like to see individuals continue to perform well. They've got a really a quality midfield as well. So if Phillips can keep taking steps forward and we see Wardlaw perform again and Simkin as a skipper in there, that would be really good. Yeah, I just think that overall they're just probably too classy and have enough contributors across the whole ground to get the job done. But I would like to see us not revert back to a competitive performance than a game where we get completely wiped off the park and then competitive and then wiped off the park. So if we can break that cycle by at least remaining competitive for majority of the game, I think most supporters will walk away pretty happy.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if we can, yeah, I mean, 5 or 6 goal loss wouldn't be too bad in the scheme of things going against the, you know, a juggernaut and at top of the table team. So, yeah, no, look, it's going to be a big challenge, but we're probably, yeah, coming up against them, you know, after finding a little bit of form. Yeah, probably at the right time, as opposed to if we played them a couple of weeks ago, it could have been disastrous. So, yeah, no, we'll wait and see how we go. Siobhan, you want to add anything else before I let you go?
No, I don't think so, Dean. I just think it was really nice to see a well-rounded performance on the weekend. So get down to the game if you can. I think the game's already sold out in general admission, so that's a fair effort. I know it's predominantly going to be Collingwood fans, but nice to see Marvel Stadium's going to be rocking again on Sunday.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully we got we can get a few people there. It'll be good to show a bit of support. And, yeah, hopefully we can put in a competitive performance. And, you know, when we kick a goal, we can hear, you know, a few supporters of the Blue and White really cheer loudly. So, yeah, hopefully, yeah, we can do well. Siobhan, always a pleasure with you. Thanks so much for coming on. And I'll chat to you next week, most likely. Thanks again.
Thank you, Dean. And go Roos.
So thank you very much to Siobhan for coming on today's show. Once again, thanks to all you lovely listeners for all the likes, retweets and comments you all put out for the show. It's much appreciated. I couldn't do this podcast without your support. So if you can leave a rating and review on your favourite podcast platform you use as well, that would be awesome. I'll be back most likely on Tuesday evening, but I might be back Monday to do the hangover show. I'll see what happens. I do have work commitments on Mondays, so it might be a bit difficult to do. So I'll either put out a show Monday or Tuesday, so look out for that. I'm sure I'll tweet it out anyway if I do one on Monday. But until then, bye for now. Not bye for now, not just yet. I've got to leave a shout-out. So in saying that, I will leave a shout-out to Brewboy at AAPREC Life. Bye for now and go Roos.